We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. Now here's your program.
And good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. Almost two decades ago, the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics released a report that was highly critical of major college sports programs. Since then, there have been a number of improvements, in part because of the Knight Commission. However, there are still concerns about a number of things, particularly the costs of competing in big-time intercollegiate sports. And that, in fact, is the subject of the recent report issued by the Knight Commission, their third major report. And we'll be talking about that this morning in this part of Focus. Our guest is Amy Perko. She is the executive director of the Knight Commission, has had that job since 2005. Before that, she served as the commission's associate director for nearly 2 years. She's also somebody who has experience as a student athlete. She played basketball at Wake Forest. She's a member of the Wake Forest Sports Hall of Fame. She was named to the Academic All-America team 3 times and earned all ACC honors twice. She's also worked at the NCAA, at the University of Kansas, as the Associate Athletics Director and Senior Women Administrator. And she's joining us this morning by telephone. And as we talk, questions from people who are listening are certainly welcome. The number, if you're here in Champaign-Urbana, is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that is good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Also, you can send in your comments by email. If you want to participate in the program that way, that's will-talk@illinois.edu. Anyway, here, input, questions from people who are listening, certainly welcome. We do ask people, please be brief. That way you can make room for other folks. But certainly anybody who is listening is welcome to participate. And Ms. Perko, hello.
Good morning, David.
Thanks very much for talking with us.
You're welcome.
We certainly appreciate it. Now, I know that you you haven't been with the commission from the very beginning, but I expect that you would be able to answer a question like this. If you look at, let's say, go back to the very first report. This was 1991, and it certainly got a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm.
This was Keeping Faith with the Student Athlete, a New Model for Intercollegiate Athletics. That's what it was called. And of course, all of the reports, if people are interested in reading them, they can go to the Knight Commission website and they can see them. But if I said, well, what do you think, looking back on that very first report, what were the most important things, do you think, that that report had to say?
Well, that report, and at that time in my career, I was actually working at the NCAA, and the report did get a lot of attention. And one of the jobs that I had as a staff member was working with the faculty representatives to help them in trying to implement some of the recommendations that were made at that time. But the major points of that initial report was to put forth a new model for college athletics governance and also policy. And it was around basically a 1+3 model, one being presidential leadership directed towards academic integrity, fiscal integrity, and then it also introduced a certification model for the athletics programs. And over the past couple decades, many of the academic reforms that were recommended in that initial report were put into place, and the governance also changed so that now the NCAA does have a governance model in which presidents sit on a board of directors and are the ultimate authority with regard to policy. And many presidents also control the athletic conferences and the policy and governance of those groups. So much has changed in the past two decades. The area that has presented really an intractable problems has been the financial area, and so much has changed with regard to the commercial market and television revenue since that time. It's really put a lot of pressure in this area.
Mm-hmm. And that's why the commission, I'm sure, has chosen in this third major report to focus on that set of issues, the economic issues.
That's correct. The commission has followed, the progress of its original recommendations through the years, and it has been pleased with the progress being made with graduation rates and many of the things being done to improve academic accountability. But the area that it felt needed to be addressed was the financial integrity and the financial pressures. And the commission made a decision really to focus on this area really prior to the economic downturn. And so certainly with all that's been going on nationally and the recession, it's certainly been a timely examination.
Mm. Well, one of the things that we can talk specifically about some of the things that are in this report, overall, though, one of the things that you point to is just how much growth there has been in the budgets of athletic associations. And, in fact, and there's a rather staggering kind of projection in the report about the future if nothing changes. That is, if present trends, you run them out into the next 10 years. That it gets even more. Do you think? And I think there always have been concerns about how much was being spent at the top levels on particularly the big revenue sports, football and basketball. But do you think that particularly though these concerns about economics and how much is being spent, has that grown more serious over the last few years?
It has grown more serious, and one of the reasons that what we did in this report is to really put it in the context of what's going on at the university, because many times in athletics, we'll talk about, you know, and compare what's going on between programs, but it really doesn't have the same type of meaning unless you know what's going on with the university. And the findings of our research and looking at the data basically show that from 2005 to 2008, athletic spending in big-time sports, and this is kind of the distinction we make in our report, is really looking at the 120 institutions that participate in big-time football, the football bowl subdivision, so the schools that participate in the Big Ten Conference, the Pac-10, the ACC, and so on. But athletic spending in those programs has grown nearly 38% from 2005 to 2008, and that's nearly double the growth for academic spending over that same time period. And you mentioned the projection, really looking at projecting this out based on the growth, and in this projection we also included the expenses for 2009, which there was a bit of a downturn there from 2008 to 2009 in athletic spending, but even projecting it out over based on the growth over the past 5 years, the top 10 institutions spending the most in college sports are projected to have $250 million budgets on average in athletics.
Mm-hmm. That's really
in 2020.
A pretty staggering amount of money.
Absolutely.
Well, and also it's certainly it makes an impression if you take a look at spending, the academic spending per student, and then the athletic spending per athlete. And you have a graph here in the report that lays it out, and it's very dramatic. First of all, you'd have to note that academic spending per student over the years we're talking about from 2005 to 2008 has been essentially flat. And that then if you look at athletic spending per athlete, not only has that gone up over that period of time, it started at a much higher level. So you're comparing it started at a little over $11,000 academic spending per student, over $61,000 athletic spending per athlete, and that has gone up to, in 2008, it was more than $84,000.
Right. And one of the basic recommendations in our report is that athletic spending and the comparison to the growth in academic spending, it needs to be public, and this is the type of information that needs to be disclosed on an annual basis. If we had been able to, we were a bit limited in even our review of the years we wanted to include, but from 2004 to 2005, there was even more tremendous growth in athletics, looking at it overall, but we were unable to get all the financial reports that made it unable to include that. So it really has been substantial growth, as you note, and the data show. The absolute spending, we have those grouped by conference, and that's available, you know, on our report on our website, which is knightcommission.org. And it basically shows that if you look at these conferences The athletic spending per athlete is anywhere from 4 to 11 times more than the academic spending per student. So the looking at the major conferences, the median of that that spending is around six times more spending on athletes than spending on the student. And then you've got a couple of the conferences, the SEC and the Big 12, that are spending 9 to 11 times more per athlete than on the academic spending per student. So the spending at the top clearly puts pressure on those that are trying to compete in those same sports, and so that's created this cost spiral that's been going on for a number of years.
And for anybody who's curious here, as we are in the Big Ten, the athletic spending per athlete is 6.8 times as much as per student here in the Big Ten. So we're not it's not the highest, but it's near the top.
Right. It's there's a gap there between the SEC and the Big 12, and then it goes Big Ten, ACC, you know, those schools that are able to generate more dollars from television revenues,
yeah.
and then goes down from there.
Well, let me ask you one other question that I've got a caller here I want to get to. Mm-hmm. When you look at this these figures, athletic spending per athlete, now that that will include, I'm sure, a number of things, and one of the big ticket items there, I'm sure, and something that on college campuses across the country gets people very exercised is the salary of the coaches. Is that really the major component there of athletic spending per athlete, and why it's so high?
Well, there are a number of different components, but certainly the coaches' salaries have increased at a much greater rate than, say, faculty salaries, which would be a component included in the academic spending. So that certainly is one of the reasons for the disparity. You know, over this time period, the median for the coaches' salaries went up 30%. So it's clearly a factor. And if you broke out football and basketball away from all the other coaches, that median would increase even much greater, because that's where the real escalation has been in those two sports. But when you look at the athletic expenses, you're including a number of different factors, everything from team travel to the salaries even of the administrators running the department, to the scholarships, as well as medical expenses, just to give you an example of some of the categories.
Let me introduce again our guest for this hour of Focus, Amy Perko. She's the executive director of the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics. For a number of years now, really almost two decades, has been a leading voice when it comes to reform of college athletics. They have put out a number of very influential reports, and a new one has just recently come out that looks very specifically at the economic issues involved in college sports. That's the title of the report is Restoring the Balance, Dollars, Values, and the Future of College Sports. And if you'd like to read it, you can go to the website of the Knight Commission and read, in fact, all their reports. And if you're interested in the subject, that's a place to go. Questions here are welcome to 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And also, you may send your emails to will-talk@illinois.edu, and we'll talk with somebody here on our toll-free line. A caller, line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Some anecdotal information, I guess. It took me back very quickly. I was an undergraduate at IU. Had a Spanish professor. I was just in a group talking with language people, and it was something to do with Big Ten basketball at the time. I think Bobby Knight was running the show then. And he said something, well, you give me, you know, X large, and I'll go down and whip the Spaniards or anybody else in a literature contest dealing with Spanish. He says, but I can't do it on what I'm given here at the university. And I started thinking about that, and then I found out I had a guy in this class of mine. I sort of carried him for a semester, and he was a football player. Always wondering how in the world he got into the university, and, you know, because I took the same test he did, and he certainly couldn't have passed the ones I passed at the time. And the next thing, you've already run down it somewhat, is following the money trail. And I presume you're putting the weight of the expenditures goes for the coaches. Then I was wondering if you could give sort of a Wall Street attitude about this thing. Is the money being spent? extent to get what they want back from it, like, you know, conference championship or, the Final Four. How do they cut those things up? Because these guys make an incredible amount of money, considering everything. And I guess I'll finish off with, what has this done to old? Let's get a bunch of guys together and play some football in the backyard. We get the guys from Brown over and see if we can beat them to really what is, you know, big time money. And has that spoiled anything along the way? And also, what happens to those guys after they're being used? I remember Bobby Knight always talked about most of his players, you know, graduated. And that's found out most players don't graduate. They're used, and that's it. And if they have academic problems, oftentimes they're, you know, moved to another situation entirely, and then they just flunk out of school. And, of course, they have somebody who takes their place from another section of some poor neighborhood. Or if you can make those kind of comments, bring them issues in there somehow to sense like this is a little more gaudy than we really think. This money, you know, developing in a sense, not evil ways, but I know that decisions can be made that lean in certain ways that maybe under more better circumstances of money being spread evenly, that they wouldn't have to take such, shall we say, behind the shadow kind of moves. Thank you.
Okay. Well, the caller's given us enough for the next couple hours. I don't know what of that you'd like to pick to start on.
Sure. Well, a couple of just major points. The commission, again, our overall goal is really to preserve all that's good about college sports and to ensure that there are policies in place that help to better align college sports with its mission, which, again, is tied directly to the universities and education. And so the recommendations, I think, just given a summary of some of the recommendations, will show how, you know, we think these policies can be adjusted to better accomplish these goals. I've talked about one of those in terms of making the financial reports filed by each institution with the NCAA, making those public, and adding measures that really provide the needed context. So those measures would compare athletic spending to academic spending. The second area of our recommendations is to reward institutions that make academic values a priority. One specific recommendation really follows up on a recommendation the commission made in its 2001 report concerning postseason eligibility and eligibility to compete for championships. And the commission believes that type of participation should be reserved for those teams that are on track to graduate at least half their athletes. That's a low standard in some respects, but a very reasonable standard that, you know, if you're not on track to graduate at least half your athletes on your team, you shouldn't be competing for the championship. And the way the incentive structure is currently structured, there are significant financial incentives for teams that make the NCAA basketball tournament. And the commission basically just believes that those tournament slots and the financial rewards that accompany them should be reserved for the teams that are, again, on track to graduate 50% of their athletes and are meeting legitimate academic standards. In addition to the revenue distribution and the incentives, another recommendation really ties revenue distribution more closely to the academic values by creating a new revenue distribution fund called the Academic Athletics Balance Fund. And basically we're recommending that current revenues that are aligned towards and awarded for winning in postseason football and postseason basketball be redirected to this Academic and Athletics Balance Fund. And we're not talking about a token distribution here. What our recommendation outlines, basically, if you use the current distributions from this year, it would have meant over $100 million available to distribute in this Academic Athletics Balance Fund that would go to institutions that are meeting the minimum benchmarks for graduation, as well as showing a balance between their academic investment and their athletics investment. There are kind of a third area of recommendations that are around treating athletes as students first and foremost, not as professionals. and some of the recommendations in that area address some of the areas that have really escalated over the past years, such as the lengthening of seasons and the number of games that are, and some of the things that have happened that really do encroach upon the athletes' academic obligations with regard to scheduling of games, as well as limiting the number of non-coaching personnel assigned to specific sports. There was the caller made a comment with regard to the coaches' salaries, and there's very little that can be done legislatively with regard to coaches' salaries because of antitrust laws. But one of the areas that can be addressed through legislation is to put limits on the growth of staff, and in football and basketball in particular, the number of staff assigned to those sports has really grown over the past several years, and it's been an area that athletic directors want to have addressed legislatively as well.
Well, just for a second to go back to something that we touched on right at the beginning, because these are issues that the caller raises. They still are, I'm sure, are in people's minds and were there in the minds of the commission when the very first report came out. If you take a look at where we were then and where we are now, and look at what is required of student athletes when they're admitted, so what standards are they required to meet just for admission, mm-hmm. and then what they're required to do in terms of their academic work to continue to be eligible to play, mm-hmm. do you think that on those, just those two things, there has been progress, and particularly when it comes to admissions, are we holding potential student athletes to the same standards that we'd hold any student?
Couple different comments there. One with regard to the academic policies over the past decade have improved with regard to academic accountability. So there've been more requirements and the requirements have been strengthened to assure that the athletes are progressing toward a degree. So you have to complete a certain percentage of degree requirements in each year progressively. In order to retain your eligibility. There's also been strengthening of and really the establishment of team accountability policies so that there are some benchmarks that have to be met in order to avoid some sanctions on number of scholarships a team can award and even penalties related to practice time. And then the most severe penalties, if there's underperformance over a series of years, would be postseason sanctions. So there have been real strengthening in those areas. The initial eligibility requirements, there have been adjustments so that there's not as much of a reliance on test scores as what there used to be. There is some concern about that area and the pressure that's being put on admissions. And so that's something that, I know the NCAA and the NCAA Board of Directors continues to look at research about that area and the initial eligibility requirements, and that's in terms of the admission. That's always been, an institutional decision about what their admissions policies are. Mm-hmm. But that's an area where there is tension if schools are admitting individuals that are coming in that need some assistance, and then you've got stronger, continuing eligibility requirements is going to create some real challenges. But the area of admissions has always been something that's in the institutional decision about what those requirements should be.
Mm. There, you certainly can make an argument that it is a good thing for students in college and university to be able to play sports and to do that at a very high level and a very competitive level. And so you'd like to offer that as a broad opportunity for students. For those people who complain about the big revenue sports and the size of the programs and the amount of money that goes into them, sometimes people who are associated with those programs say, well, now, wait a minute. If it's important for you to have students here be able to play soccer, baseball, golf, tennis, lacrosse, to swim, to have gymnastics, all those other things, they would say, the big revenue sports, the basketball and football, make it possible for students to do all of those other sports. And if it wasn't for the big revenue sports, we might not have soccer, tennis, golf, gymnastics, lacrosse, you know, you name your sport.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that really is true?
Well, I think you have to look at it in terms of the different models. There, you know, the spending rates and some of the real financial challenges we've talked about involve those 120 institutions playing big-time football. There are, in addition to those, there are over 200 other Division I schools. And then there are another, you know, 700 schools that compete in the NCAA Division II and Division III. And just, you know, a statistic for all those universities, when you look at the finances of all those universities, just 7 universities generated enough athletics revenue to cover their expenses for their entire program in each of the past 5 years. So nearly all programs rely on institutional support to balance their athletics budget. Clearly, at the most competitive divisions in terms of the television revenue and the football bowl subdivision, there are significant revenues being generated by football and basketball that do help support those other programs. If they weren't there, I think they would continue to exist, but it would just exist in a different model. And the Division III and Division II institutions are examples of, how those models exist without the influx of television revenue and gate receipts, and they rely, obviously, much more significantly, you know, upwards of 80% for institutional support, whereas the Division I programs rely much, or at least the football bowl subdivision institutions rely much less significantly on institutional support. So there are vast differences when you compare programs, and interestingly, when you look at the FBS programs, those with the major football programs, they have the much larger budgets. At the median, their budgets are over $40 million. But over the past several years, there have been more sports dropped in that particular division than there have been at Division II and Division III institutions, which have been increasing the number of sports. And that's been happening because students love to compete, and they love these opportunities. And the Division II and III institutions really have, you know, those types of opportunities integrated within their university and their admissions plan and some of the students they're targeting. So it's, the FBS level has been more of a philosophy of, the highly competitive programs and putting a lot of money into fewer sports and really focused on spectator sports than, say, you know, the model being followed by other institutions.
Our guest in this hour of focus is Amy Perko. She is the executive director of the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics and has been with the commission now, I think, since 2007. She also worked as the associate director. She worked at the NCAA and also at the University of Kansas, where she was associate athletics director and senior women administrator. She was also an athlete when she was a student at Wake Forest. She played basketball there. We're talking here about the third major report issued by the commission, just came out about a month ago, the product of almost 2 years of work looking at the economics of college sports. The report is Restoring the Balance, Dollars, Values, and the Future of College Sports. And if you want to read it, you can go to the website of the Knight Commission. That's knightcommission.org, and that's Knight with a K, K-N-I-G-H-T. Questions here are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Also, you can send emails to will-talk at illinois.edu, and we'll talk with someone else here on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. You know, I feel that college sports is so overblown and so overpaid. Some of these guys are getting way too much money. And, you know, for a guy to have a scholarship, it's impossible unless you're a super athlete. A classic example of what's going on there is what happened to USC. There's these infractions there, but I feel like some of them are unfair and unbalanced also. If you find SEC schools seem to get away with a lot more than the Pac-10, the Big Ten, and other affiliated schools, NOAC, And, you know, for some reason, there's all these imperfections. There's all these infractions of the code and what, you know, basically bought and paid for athletes. It's they favor certain groups of schools, and you find out later how bad it is. But my question is, though, is there a way to maybe tighten the rules or make something so it's more preventable so that basically you don't have one group of schools owning another group of schools and, you know, bending or breaking the rules as they see fit? And, you know, as far as other related sports, I've always been a big fan of boosters, some other way outside of the school to fund, you know, the activities, because it's gotten way out of hand. And it's making it harder and harder for an honest kid to go to school anymore, unless you're a super athlete. I was curious what your comments, and I'll get off. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, in terms of the infractions, you know, that's been a problem since, you know, the schools began competing against each other in terms of, and it really, you know, speaks to just things that happen in society. You'll never be able to legislate morality. There's always going to be some coaches or even some agents trying to push the envelope to get ahead, and so you're always going to have infractions, unfortunately. But, you know, the system is set up to be fair. But the one of the important recommendations that the commission is making, you know, it really addresses and runs to the incentives, and it runs to the principles. If we say that, you know, one of the principles of intercollegiate competition and one of the things we care about is to strengthen each institution's educational mission and preserve and promote these educational opportunities for students, then what we're saying is that our incentives should reflect that. And the incentives currently are distorted and are hurting the enterprise overall, and that's why we're saying, you know, let's change some of the incentives. And instead of in the NCAA basketball tournament, every time a team wins a game, basically their conference gets $200,000 for the next 6 years based on that win. And so those wins become, you know, really important to the coaches and the conference and the schools as that money adds up. So we're saying, you know, instead of all that money being awarded for winning, let's put half of that towards an academic athletics balance and award the institutions that are on track to graduate at least half their athletes and are showing a balance between their athletic investment and academic investment. And we think that type of change overall will help to preserve intercollegiate athletics and will help to recenter it and really realign it with the principles.
Do you think, now, again, I think there are people who will argue that one of the things that athletic programs at universities do is gives students a chance to go to college through scholarships that they wouldn't otherwise have. And we're not just talking about basketball and football players here. There are scholarships that are awarded for people to play all kinds of sports.
Sure.
And for some families, that can be very helpful and maybe indeed will make the difference between their son or daughter being able to go to college or not. Mm-hmm. But just what is the contribution toward making it possible for people to go to college, the contribution made by university and college sports programs?
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly, again, the commission's overall premise has been from the very beginning that athletics has an important role to play in the university, and it has an important role that it plays in the lives of the athletes who are participating. And it exists first and foremost to be part of the educational development of the participants. And, you know, the further we move away from that core, that's when the enterprise gets into trouble, when it begins to make decisions about what's best for the enterprise from a commercial standpoint but ignores what's best for the athletes. And that's why, you know, we're saying in those decisions that are made, what's best for the athletes needs to be front and center and really drive those decisions. You know, I can speak from my own experience in terms of athletics participation, and again, certainly we believe that, you know, there's so many things that can be learned, and it is part of the educational development of the student in terms of what they take away from it with leadership and teamwork and perseverance and just so many attributes that can be helpful throughout life. So certainly the scholarships do help to provide those opportunities. One of the recommendations that we do make is that, you know, scholarships need to be reexamined. The last time that, you know, major changes were made to the number of scholarships permitted per each sport was conducted 30 years ago, and the landscape, you know, sports landscape has changed drastically since then. We do think there are some sports that could stand a conservative reduction in the number of opportunities, and football being one of those. Each football team can offer 85 scholarships in the Football Bowl subdivision, and we think there could be a conservative reduction there to help with overall cost and sustainability. And it may be that, you know, that those savings can be applied to other sports so that other sports wouldn't have to be dropped.
All right, let's talk with somebody else on our line number one. Another caller here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I find your talk very interesting, but I think in a way we're being a little hard on our society because I think there's this natural desire to like very organized sports. And let me digress just a little bit. I'm a Civil War buff, and I read lots of books about the battles. I read diaries about the battles. And over in the diaries or direct quotes in the battle books, they'll have a quote from a guy who's saying, "There, moments before the battle, all the armies were in position. The flags were flying. The band was playing. There were men on horseback, men on foot. There were cannons out." And they'll end it with, "It was the most beautiful sight I've ever seen." And after I read that a few times, I thought, he's describing a football game at college. And I got to thinking about that, and I really think that organized sports, in a way, are civilized man's substitute for war. It's competition that's theoretically not hurting anybody, and yet it's got all that pomp and circumstance. And I just found that fascinating reaction in those Civil War soldiers. And I'll get off and listen to your responses.
All right. Well, you have thought about that?
Well, there have been, you know, a number of books and works that certainly pick up on that theme, that, you know, the role organized sports plays within building community. And certainly sports, professional sports, college sports, play is a really significant role in their communities with regard to bringing a community together and kind of the spectacle that was described. So, you know, where our report is not saying that you have to do away with all that. We're again saying, you know, let's look at the core mission of these sports. Let's look at the core mission of the university, and let's make some changes to bring about a better balance, and really for the overall preservation of college sports as a whole. We did as part of our examination, we interviewed university presidents of the Football Bowl subdivision schools, of which there are 120, and 95 of the presidents participated in this survey. And a couple of key findings really helped drive the commission's recommendations. And one of those findings was that only a quarter of the presidents thought that intercollegiate athletics were sustainable in their current form nationally, given the trends in revenues and expenses. So clearly, the presidents recognized a need for change. And another key finding was that presidents felt they had limited ability to make significant financial reforms and adjustments on their own individually, and the majority were supportive of collective measures. So again, the commission recommendations help to offer some measures that the presidents can act upon collectively.
We have about 10 minutes here. Let me introduce again the guest for anybody who might have tuned in. We're talking with Amy Perko. She's the executive director of the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics. And we are talking particularly about some of the things that you'll find in a recent report, the third really major report the commission has issued. It's just been out for about a month. Restoring the Balance, Dollars, Values, and the Future of College Sports is what it's called, and it looks at the economic issues in college sports. And if you want to read it, you can go to the website of the Knight Commission. One of the things that I really wanted to get to a little bit sooner in the conversation, but I do at least want to mention it here. One of the things that I think people have pointed out as an issue, if not a problem, with college athletics for a long time is the fact that in almost all college sports programs, they lose money. Very, very few consistently manage to make money. And that is an issue to the extent that if you have so much in the way of expenses and your revenue generated don't meet your expenses, then the institution's got to make up for it. And that can be very dramatic, maybe not so much in the places where they have the bigger programs, but actually in the places where they have the smaller programs, where institutional funds really you have to be spending a lot of institutional funds to make up the difference between what your program makes and what it costs. Can you say that this is a problem, or to what extent is it a problem that college sports programs, if they're losing money, are taking away funds that would be going into the more direct kind of educational enterprise of the institution?
Well, that is an important point, and it is one of the myths that the public believes. We actually polled the public in 2005, and it was over 70, basically 3 in 4 Americans thought that college sports, big-time sports, generated a profit for the academic use of the university, and the stats, as you pointed out, show that that's not the case, and as I mentioned, only 7 universities generated enough revenues to cover their expenses in athletics in each of the past 5 years. So that money, you know, the money from the institution that could go to academics is being used to balance the budget, and the commission is not advocating against that. It has supported basically the practice of institutions supporting the athletics budget. But again, there needs to be a balance, and certainly it can't continue where the institutional support for athletics is growing at a much faster pace than the increase in the budget for academic spending, and that's been the case. And, you know, I talked earlier about the growth in just overall spending, but we did the same type of breakdown in looking at what's the growth been in the institutional support for the athletics program compared to the growth in academic spending, and the imbalance was basically the same. It's been nearly double what the academic spending has been. So certainly that's a concern and a problem, and again was a specific concern of presidents noted in the presidential survey that the commission conducted, and nearly half of the presidents were concerned about the level of support that they had to provide for their athletics program and the trends of those increases.
All right, let's talk with another caller on our toll-free line here, line 4. Hello.
Hello, is it me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to take a point of view quite opposite from that of the lady that called. I don't think that real reform in this area is really possible, not serious reform. I'm going to take a radical view, but I think that intercollegiate varsity athletics should be eliminated at universities. I'm not opposed to all sports at universities. I'm not opposed to intramural sports. I'm not opposed to various recreational and intramural sports activities. But I do think that intercollegiate varsity athletics should be eliminated. Now, I know both of you are going to tell me that this isn't going to happen ever. And I understand that most people would tell me that this isn't going to happen. But one reason it isn't going to happen is that so many people believe it isn't going to happen and there's no chance of getting it done. There are many universities, I think there are several universities who would be willing to get rid of their programs. Many universities don't win much anyway. They have teams that are not very successful at all in the big, especially the big sports. So anyway, that's my view. I know that the guests will disagree with me strongly, but I do believe that I believe that at least the University of Chicago, I think, eliminated their athletics in 1942, didn't they? I don't know if they – I guess they bought it back. But anyway, that's my viewpoint, and I thought I would just throw it out there.
All right. Well, I appreciate the okay. comment. I don't know, Ms. Perko, it's I'm sure that it's really not the purpose of the commission really to say one way or another, yes, colleges should have sports programs or that they should not. You can respond any way that you want.
Sure. Well, no, the commission has taken a position. And again, I think important to note here the makeup of the commission. This is an independent group, and the members of our group volunteer their time because they care about higher education, they care about college sports, and they believe that college sports does have a role to play within not only the lives of the participants and an important educational part of the participants, but also the role within the university and the university communities. And the makeup of the commission is presidents of universities serve on our commission, several former presidents, as well as board of trustee members and former athletes. And so with that makeup and the people that do care about college sports, and again, we want to preserve all that's good about college sports, to the caller's point, I would like to note that, you know, intercollegiate athletics and its future, there have been significant investments made by universities in its facilities. Debt service is a huge expenditure each year for a number of universities, and this is another area that we think it's important that be publicly disclosed so that the public understands the overall debt and the long-term debt being held by universities on these facilities and the growth that is occurring. In our report, we show that, you know, the 10 institutions with the largest budgets, they basically the median for their overall athletics debt is over $120 million. So certainly there's significant investment and, you know, a long-term view in terms of the revenues they hope to generate from the public using those facilities to watch games.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's very clear, the report makes very clear the feeling of the commission that people really started to think differently about college athletics at the point where there got to be more public information about graduation rates and performance of student athletes. And it seems that you're saying that at the very least, you're not saying, you know, either maybe there should or shouldn't be sports, but that people, both community members and alums and people at those universities ought to know what the costs are, that at least that ought to be out there and that ought to be part of the conversation about how it is that these programs are organized and run.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And we do think that academic reform really did hit a tipping point when the graduation rates were first shared publicly. And after that point, there began to be significant reforms and reforms that really took hold. And we believe the same can be true with financial reform when there's far greater openness about the spending on college sports. You know, and again, with the more effective disclosure of finances, we really do believe it will enhance the long-term prospects of college athletics because then policies will begin to form that will ensure that, you know, they remain part of the central mission of colleges and universities. I think that, you know, the more that people feel that college sports is really just about a product, creating a product that can be aired by ESPN or CBS, then you raise a question of, you know, how is this tied to the mission of our universities? And so it really has to be the policies have to help ensure that these sports are tied to the missions of the universities and they're not viewed just as let's create some sport content for the television networks.
Well, just we have about a minute here. I am curious, did you find it difficult to get the data to be able to do this, that is to get a complete picture of what the finances of college sports programs were?
In terms of the data with regard to the athletics data, we relied on USA Today did a great investigation of college sports spending, and they had basically requested from every university the financial reports through Freedom of Information Act. So we were able to use that database to be able to break out, you know, conference spending and to provide that type of view that we felt needed to be provided. There's much, you know, more specific much more specific data that's provided annually with regard to academic spending, and so we worked with experts who manage those databases to be able to do the comparisons. But certainly, our efforts would have been helped tremendously if we had the type of public disclosure requirements in that we think should be there.
Well, there we're going to have to leave it. If you're interested in reading more on the subject and reading the report that we've been talking about, the report is Restoring the Balance, Dollars, Values, and the Future of College Sports. It's by the Knight Commission, just been out about a month now. And it's really the third major report and one that really looks specifically at economic issues in college sports. So if you'd like to read it, you go to the website of the Knight Commission, KnightCommission.org. You can read that. In fact, you can read all of their reports, and there's a lot of information there about college athletics. Our guest, Amy Perko, is the executive director of the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics. And Ms. Perko, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thank you, David.
Coming up in the next part of Focus, we'll be shifting to a very different topic, and we'll be talking about corrections policy and how it is we fight crime and the role that prisons play in dealing with the problem of crime. One of the things that we know is there are a lot of Americans in jail, and that we continue to put people in jail in spite of the fact that crime rates in recent years have declined. We'll be talking in the next hour with Mark Kleiman. He's professor of public policy at UCLA, and we'll be talking about some of what you'll find in his recent book, When Brute Force Fails, How to Have Less Crime and Less Punishment.